It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, livestock economist Darrell Peel. First off, Seth Meyer, chief economist at USDA, on the drought in Argentina.
We made some downward adjustments on Argentina, both corn and soybean production, due to drought. And yes, we have a discussion about there being some timely rains. And part of the discussion is we would have made a bigger downward adjustment had we not had those timely rains. So we were talking about cutting Argentine corn production by a little under 10% or 5 million metric tons. So you got 5 million metric tons. That's the bulk of the corn production changes this month. And on the soybean side, we cut Argentine production by 4.5 million metric tons. There, too, that's about a 10% decline in overall production in Argentina. No change in Brazil and no change in Paraguay's production. Brazil and Paraguay showing good year-over-year rebounds in their overall production.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Darrell Peel. Darrell is Oklahoma State University Extension Livestock Economist, and I'm sure there's a better title there for you, but do we come close?
Well, there's a longer title, but not necessarily a better one, so that's fine.
Great to see you, Southwest Beef Symposium. I think we met at a Southwest Beef Symposium over 20 years ago, and I think it was in Roswell. If we would have only known that some of the strange things that were going to come to the industry over the next 20 years, wow, what a ride.
It has been a heck of a ride. You know, the industry from a long-term standpoint has undergone a lot of changes. And then obviously the last few years has just been a whirlwind of, call them black swan events or whatever you want to call them. We've just had a lot of issues and things that have gone on. And on top of the normal dynamics of the cattle industry, which are always there, and, you know, this industry doesn't really need any help to be exciting. From that standpoint, there's always lots of things going on.
I'm going to circle back on 20 years here in just a minute, but first half of the year, what's it look like for calf and yearling market?
You know, we've been trending up for the last 2 years, really coming out of 2020. Cattle markets have improved. That trend is well in place. We expect that to continue. Now, you know, short term, yeah, we can see some ups and downs of weather issues this time of the year. So we got, you know, several more months here where we can have weather impacts on, you know, both the feeder and fed cattle markets, maybe more so on fed cattle. But if you can't truck them around, you can't move cattle, then weather impacts are an impact. But that doesn't change the fact that the underlying numbers are tighter. The, you know, the overall situation from a supply fundamental standpoint is going to continue to support this market. And so we've definitely got expectations for, you know, stronger prices for these calves, feeder cattle, you know, whether it's lightweight calves, stocker type calves, or the bigger feeder cattle on into the fed cattle market.
You and I had the conversation about a year ago talking about where we had been, I think, 19 years previous. Industry really changed in 20 years ago, 10 years ago, sorry, with what happened in Plainview on the heels of a drought. How much has that changed the industry?
Well, you know, the packing industry in this country, most of that infrastructure that we rely on for the bulk of our slaughter was built in the 70s and 80s, early 80s. And that was a time period when we had 20 to 25 million more head of cattle than we do today, just from the long-term adjustments in the industry. So there was chronic excess capacity in that industry for, you know, the most producers today can't remember a time when that wasn't the case. And that's what made that such a change. After, you know, we had closed a couple of plants earlier, but that last plant that closed at Plainview in 2013 really brought the total capacity down to a level where then we were in a drought and we bottomed in 2014. The expansion that followed that by 2016 to 2017, cattle numbers were back up enough where now for the first time maybe ever, we were really bumping up against that slaughter capacity. That creates different dynamics in the industry. Obviously, it changes, you know, the negotiation, if you will, between buyers and sellers. And that's something we had just not ever really seen before. So that was a big, big change for us.
I mean, it's 10 years ago, still pretty fresh in the mind for quite a few, but are there some things that we need to start paying attention to now, especially if we bring it into La Nina? Are there some things we need to keep in mind as we get ready to start rebuilding the herd?
You know, I think there's no doubt that we're going to see, you know, significant incentives to rebuild. The last drought, which, you know, numbers bottomed in 2014, we were smaller than we needed to be. The market really said we were bigger than that, and that's what provided the motivation for the kind of cattle prices we had in 2014 and 15 to jumpstart and spur that expansion. We're going to see something like that again. With the numbers we just got from USDA for 2023, we're smaller than we need to be. And we're not sure yet whether the drought's over. So we're not sure exactly when we start this process of rebuilding, but it is going to happen. If not in 2023, then after that, at some point in time, we're going to see something like that again. And we had never seen it before 2014 and 15. So I do think there are some lessons to kind of learn. You know, we learned that cattle prices can go much higher maybe than we really anticipated. I think we'll see that again. And because of the general trend in things, they'll go even higher than they did last time. There's almost no doubt of that. How much higher is a different question. But they also didn't stay up there very long. You know, you have to have those prices to jumpstart that expansion. They didn't stay too long, and you know, when you look at the female market, cows and heifer prices went phenomenally high. We bought those cows, and then it turns out that we couldn't pay for them. The market didn't really stay long enough to pay for them. So I think we need to think about that as an industry, but especially as individuals, of sort of who's going to play this game. And I say it's a game. It's deadly serious business in terms of who's really in the best financial condition to be a part of this ride up, because we're not sure how long it lasts before we start the backside of this thing. And we probably ought to think about that a little more maybe than we did 10 years ago.
I think, one of your slides here earlier, looked at Mexico and we're expecting to, we've got an appetite for beef. We're going to have to get it from somewhere if we don't have enough here. What do you see coming down the road as far as imports? Could we start seeing more of the maybe less lean because we import a lot of lean? But how are we going to keep feeding this appetite we have for demand?
Well, and the thing is, you know, we had record level beef production in 2022, but we built that record production on the backs of liquidation, right? So it's not a sustainable thing. So we know that beef production is going to fall starting in 2023, probably for the next two or three years at least. So, you know, things like cow slaughter, which have been elevated the last 2 years, are going to drop sharply with implications for the ground beef market in particular. So, you know, we're probably going to see, you know, we're going to have less beef. That's going to imply some rationing of beef in the domestic market through higher prices, more than likely. It implies likely that we're going to import some more beef, in particular that processing beef, because I think that supply is going to be really impacted as we cut cow culling at some point when we do try to stop liquidating. And we'll probably see exports back off a little bit from the record levels we had in 2022. We just got that data to confirm that we did set a new record in 2022. But, you know, going forward, A, we're not going to have as much beef. B, it's probably going to be more expensive. And, you know, the strength of the dollar in an exchange rate sense has been a headwind a little bit, although that has backed off a little bit. So we have to wait and see how that goes. But for all of those reasons, we're going to see some differences in these trade flows that will help supplement the market here in one way or another.
I'm bouncing all over the place because as you say something, it reminds me of something else that you had said earlier. 18 times something happened over the past year, dealing, I think it was 18 and 100,000 head. What are we talking?
Yeah, you bet. You know, the last several years, we talked earlier about this balance between slaughter capacity and how that adjusted over about a 20-year period to get down to a level. Then the last herd expansion going up to the peaks in 2019 sort of tapped that balance and really put us in a situation. Then things like the pandemic with the labor issues that and the constraints that provided meant that we really did face a very binding bottleneck, if you will, in the industry. And so, you know, we've been watching that, and the labor problems in particular in the packing industry have been particularly acute the last few years. And so the numbers that you're referring to in 2022, 18 times we saw daily fed cattle slaughter exceed 100,000 head. And that had not happened since 2013. So over that time, we've been close. We're up there, 98, 99, 99 and a half, but we had not been over 100,000. And if you go prior to 2013, we did it quite a lot. A lot of years, you know, 30 to 50 times. But it hadn't happened since then. So first one happened in either May or June of 2022. And then by the end of the year, we were hitting them, you know, semi-regularly, 100,000 head. So what that means is that we probably don't have the kinds of labor issues in the packing plant. We haven't changed the overall capacity much, maybe some small plants, but the mainstream capacity is the same. But we're using it more effectively now because we don't have the labor constraints. And so, you know, and of course, with numbers getting tighter now, as we go forward, we obviously have plenty of capacity for the number of cattle that we're going to be able to produce here for the next 3 to 5 years at least.
So good to see you. There's so much going on. All I can say is hold on to this wild ride. Could be interesting.
I think you need to fasten your seat belts. It may be a little bumpy. It will no doubt be exhilarating at times and maybe downright frightening at times. But, you know, it's the nature of this industry. We've been through some things kind of like it before. There'll be some differences this time. You know, it's just the nature of this industry. We will get things done. We will get back to where we need to be. I have no doubt the industry will rebuild from the liquidation that's been forced on us by the drought. But exactly how that happens, we have to watch and see over the next, you know, 1 to 3 or 4 years.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Darrell Peel. He joins us from the Southwest Beef Symposium in Lubbock. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
At Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, our mission is to ensure the long-term profitability of our grower owners through value-added marketing programs and through services to their gins. As a true cooperative, we pay dividends back to our grower owners to financially strengthen their farming operations, whether in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or New Mexico. Rest assured, at PCCA, we make money for you, not from you.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Seth Meyer is chief economist at USDA on Florida citrus production.
I think one of the interesting discussions out of the citrus production report is the low levels of production we are reaching this year. And you do have a combination of generally declining production in Florida for oranges on top of some serious weather events this year. And so production being multi-decades lows, perhaps not a surprise, but still interesting to see and look through some of the production results this year and how low of production we actually hit in Florida.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer healthcare benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative healthcare solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.
It's been said defense wins championships, but in farming, playing defense doesn't pencil out. When growing cotton, you'll score big when you cut your input cost on seed and have the flexibility to apply multiple modes of action. Growing conventional cotton puts you on the offense because at the end of the season, you'll catch and delete your cotton, which helps save 50% or more on your seed costs next year. Find out why more farmers are going conventional and winning big. Call Brownfield Seed or go online, brownfieldseed.com. Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Oklahoma State livestock economist, Dr. Darrell Peel.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
After earning record-high incomes last year, even while dealing with an 11% hike in production expenses, the nation's farmers this year could see another increase in those expenses.
They're going to increase, but not as much, about 4%.
Spiro Stefano runs USDA's Economic Research Service. He says actually farmers may spend a little less this year on fuel, fertilizer, and feed, but they'll have to shell out more for just about everything else, including
their livestock and poultry purchases. Those are expected to go up nearly 14%. Labor costs are going up as well, just over 7%.
Biggest expected percentage increase will come in interest costs. But USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says coming off record high incomes in 2022,
folks should be in a pretty good position in general to maybe be able to minimize borrowing to some extent or narrow borrowing to some extent.
He says overall interest costs could climb 22% this year. Gary Crawford, Washington.